Movie ads used to say, "You've read the book, now see the movie." These days, the ads are more likely to say, "You've seen the original, now see the sequel." And the sequel to the sequel. Well, there's no escaping Hollywood's love affair with extending stories across multiple films. As Constantine Varavis knows all too well, Varavis is senior lecturer in film and television studies at Monash University in Melbourne, Australia. He's also the co-editor, along with Carol and Jess Cook, of Second Takes, Critical Approaches to the Film Sequel. Varavis told Steve Paulson why so many movie sequels are being made.
Some would say that it's a purely commercial imperative, that if you have a property that has been successful, an original film that has made money, that has created an audience for itself, that one of the ways in which to guarantee another part of the market share is to extend and further develop that property through those various strategies that I've described, either remaking sequels or series. We can think about it, I suppose, related to genre filmmaking, where people want to go and see something which is new, but also something that is familiar. So remakes and sequels and series are, in a sense, more specific instances of the kind of strategies that we find in genre filmmaking, where there is a sense that we have a pre-sold audience, an audience that already takes an interest in a thriller or a horror film or a Western, that will go back and look for more of the same in a similar way and more precise way, I suppose. The remake or the sequel wants to attract that pre-sold audience. So certainly that's the commercial explanation for the phenomenon of sequels and sequelization.
Well, most film critics don't like sequels and remakes because they seem to lack originality, which is often the gold standard for what people look for in a movie. Do you share this critique of the lack of originality in a sequel?
No, I don't. I suppose what I've tried to do and what we've tried to do in the Second Takes book is to open up the concept of the remake and the sequel. I think one way to think about of these is to, say, take the instance of the remake. If we think about it as a noun, we can think of film remakes as a group of films that are derived in some way or another from previously made films. And there's a sense that they get, duplicated and repeated. But if we think about the idea of remakes as a verb, if we think that the film remakes, then we can think about it in the way that it transforms in a continual process of production. So it becomes a more creative and open-ended thing. And another way of thinking about that, I suppose, is that there's a very specific thing, which is the film remake, this category of films derived from other properties. But there's also the concept of film remaking, and this is an endless process of production that we find in all filmmaking. And I guess we tried to take that similar idea to the concept of the sequel, to think about the film sequel as a noun, as a quite specific thing, but also to think about the process of sequelization and to open that up beyond simply industrial or commercial ideas.
And then usually when people talk about how the sequel took over Hollywood, they talk about the 1970s to the big blockbusters.
Yes.
And I suppose Star Wars is the obvious example because it spawned these incredibly successful sequels.
That's right. There is a sense that through the 1970s that Hollywood starts to increase its number of remakes and sequels. I haven't done the number crunching myself, but others have. It doesn't seem to be the case when you look at the figures that there is any greater number of sequels or remakes being made through that period. But certainly we have these very high-profile blockbuster films, as you say, from Star Wars, from slightly earlier with Jaws, from 1975. And of course, before that, one of the best known sequels in The Godfather Part 2.
Let me ask you about the Godfather movies, because that's a fascinating case, because Godfather Part 2 was the first sequel ever to win an Academy Award for Best Film. And what's striking about that second Godfather movie is, I mean, part of it takes place actually before the first Godfather movie, and that's what, I suppose, that's partly what gives it this sense of originality, that it wasn't just picking up on where things were left after the first movie.
Yes, it has that interesting structure and that kind of awkward term, the prequel, that is used to describe those films. Quite often in the case where there seems to be no no way to develop the story beyond the previous installment, usually because of the death of a principal character. And so we go back to an earlier moment in that in time. So The Godfather does pick up that structure where it's a bit of a prequel and also a sequel, and sets up the parallel stories of Michael Corleone taking over the empire after his father's death, and also the pre-story of Vito and how he's actually built the family up to the point of the events of the previous film.
There's a plane waiting for us to take us to Miami in an hour, all right? They'll make a big thing about it. I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
You have an essay in your book, Second Takes, called Redefining the Sequel, and you focus on George Romero's trilogy of zombie films. If people don't remember, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. And then later on, he did a fourth and a fifth zombie movie as well.
And a sixth one now.
And, oh, a sixth one, too.
There's a sixth one as well.
I guess you like zombie films.
I do. It seemed to be an interesting case study for the reasons I addressed before, taking up this idea of sequelization and trying to open it up, to try to understand how that concept is kept in place.
So how did George Romero approach this whole notion of sequels?
He wanted to allegorize by way of the zombie film and to depict kind of an idea of class struggle, of this underclass of zombies trying to reassert themselves. And so Romero says that he saw the zombie film through the 70s, 80s, into the 90s as an opportunity to create a kind of a snapshot of what America was like at the time that he was making the particular installment.
So there's a political dimension to George Romero's zombie films. I guess I never realized that.
Well, it seems to be one of the things that that audiences are attracted to. I guess as the films progress in the series, the political message becomes increasingly overt. I suppose as it is in the case of Land of the Dead, where America seems to have become a walled fortress, trying to insulate itself from the outside world. And one of the characters is thought to be a George Bush Jr. type character. Dawn of the Dead does this particularly well by having the survivors take refuge in a shopping mall, and this becomes sort of a comment on consumer America in the 1970s, with the zombies kind of like dazed shoppers trying to return to the mall to find their former identities through shopping and consumerism.
They're still here.
They're after us. They know we're still in here.
They're after the place. They don't know why. They just remember. Remember that they want to be in here.
What the hell are they?
They're us, that's all. There's no more room in hell.
What?
This is something my granddaddy used to tell us. You know Mukumbo? Voodoo. Granddad was a priest in Trinidad. He used to tell us, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Konstantin Varivas is the co-editor of and a contributor to Second Takes, Critical Approaches to the Film Sequel. He spoke with Steve Paulson.